So chapter 7, the ending section, we were discussing just after the Chaturshloki verses and just after the Chaturshloki verse. After that section, the last verse we read was that Sutta Goswami says, now I'm going to describe Krishna Katha, and specifically, well, he says he's going to describe how Maharaj Parikshit was saved and so forth. And he begins discussing the heinous act of Ashvatthama by beheading 5 children while they were asleep, and then fleeing for his life afterwards, Arjuna pursuing him, Ashvatthama throwing Brahmastra weapon, Arjuna praying to Krishna for guidance, what to do, Krishna giving the guidance, Arjuna withdrawing the Brahmastra weapon by his own Brahmastra weapon, capturing Ashvatthama, bringing Ashvatthama before Draupadi, Draupadi saying, spare him, Yudhisthira saying, spare him, Bhima saying, kill him, Krishna saying, kill him, but appreciating the words of Draupadi at the same time, so it was spare him and kill him. And that's what Ashvatthama, that's what Arjuna did. He killed him and spared him at the same time by Krishna's inspiring just how to do that. So that ends the storyline, at least, of chapter 7. So the Kurukshetra battle is now over. And the beginning of chapter 8 is the funeral for all the deceased personalities who were killed in the Kurukshetra battle. Text 1 is Sutta Goswami speaking. He says, thereafter the Pandavas, desiring to deliver water to the dead relatives who had desired it, went to the Ganges with Draupadi. The ladies walked in front. So, cultural point that in Vedic culture, a tradition which was at the time of the Pandavas and before the time of the Pandavas and since the time of the Pandavas, they observed the procedure of going to the Ganges and unto the departed relatives offering Ganges water, pots, empty pots filled with Ganges water, with prayers unto the Ganges to sanctify the departed soul with prayers, then their own bath. And so they followed that procedure. Having lamented over them, that's the departed relatives, and sufficiently offered Ganges water, they then bathed in the Ganges, whose water is sanctified due to being mixed with the dust of the lotus feet of the Lord. Rajaputa Sarijjale. Then there sat the king of the Kurus, Maharaj Yudhisthira, along with his younger brothers and Dhritarashtra, Gandhari, Kunti, and Draupadi. All overwhelmed with grief, Lord Krishna was also there. Mentioned in the purport is that Subhadra was also there. Prabhupada explains in the purport that the while there was a winning party and losing party, one says they all lost because the parties on both sides were relatives. They, by one means or another, by marriage, or by ancestry, or both. So everyone was grieving together. And because of that situation of grieving, it was natural and appropriate that the most elevated saintly person in their midst would speak to mitigate their grief, and that was Krishna. Krishna began to speak. Text 4. Citing the stringent laws of the Almighty and their reactions upon living beings, Lord Sri Krishna and the Munis began to pacify those who were shocked and affected. The stringent laws of the Supreme or the Almighty is how Prabhupada translates Kala. And Kala means time. So, time is invincible. No one can stop time. And from Bhagavad Gita we know that Kala is Krishna. Or Kala Shakti is an energy of Krishna. Therefore, we can also say Kala is Krishna. But according to the movements of time, it's a nice role of time in events or in life or in duty. It is a very deep and interesting subject of the five topics of the Bhagavad Gita. This factor of time is very mysterious. What is time? I mean, have you ever seen any time? Seen it? You know, it's a force, and it operates differently. Time is relative, and time is eternal, and time is temporary, and it makes things happen, it makes things stop, it destroys things. Very mysterious. Nothing happens without time. And it's a stringent law of the Almighty. In the purport, Prabhupada is taking this term, stringent law, in a different way. He's taking it to mean dharma. He writes, these laws and orders are generally called dharma or religion. The Lord makes all laws and laws and orders. Of course, people make laws and orders too, but they're fallible. And the laws and orders of the Supreme Lord are infallible. No one can create any religious formula. Bona fide religion is to abide by the orders of the Lord. So there's stringent laws and we follow them. And that's, I probably have heard it 200 times, Prabhupada, in different lectures, saying religion means laws given by God, and a religious person is one who follows the laws given by God. Religion is laws given by God, and a religious person is one who follows the laws given by God. Someone's religious if they follow the laws. They follow the scripture. The teachings of their religion. Their religious person. And then Prabhupada would challenge, you say you're religious. What about this law that you're not following? What about that law that you're not religious? One lecture, Prabhupada was saying, he was just in Sweden, and there was a big assembly, many, 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 many people in the assembly, and one young man came up afterwards with a big smile and said, "Your talk was very nice, but I'd like you to know that I'm a Christian." And Prabhupada said, immediately I said to him, "You are not a Christian." Although I had never met him before, I immediately said, "You are not a Christian." And the man was surprised and said, "Well, how can you say that?" He said, "If you say that you're Christian, do you accept the teachings of the Bible?" He said, "Of course I accept the teachings of the Bible." "And now you're eating meat?" "Yes, I'm eating meat." "Then you are not a Christian." "What do you mean? I'm a Christian. I believe in Christ." That definition of believing is not the definition of the Prabhupada would go by. The religious person is one who follows those teachings, and the teachings say, "Thou shalt not kill." Prabhupada said the young man didn't know what to say. Then I explained why you're killing, and you should stop your killing. He didn't say become a member of my religion. He said become the true follower of your religion. Be religious. As long as we are in the material world, our duty is to follow the orders of the Lord. And if, by the grace of the Lord, we are liberated from the clutches of the material world, then our liberated stage, in our liberated stage, we also can render transcendental loving service to the Lord. Then back in our material stage, we can see neither ourselves nor the Lord for want of spiritual vision. But when we are liberated from material affection, here's this sneha topic again appearing in, because this is the bereavement of everybody after the Kurukshetra battle was due to sneha, material affection. My relatives, my family, my cousins, and so on. My husband. Because in the assembly were the daughters-in-law of Gandhari, so she had 100 sons, so the sons were all gone, so it's just she had 100 daughters-in-law, each of whom were without husbands. And Gandhari was without sons, and Pandavas were out without cousins, and so on. So, on the platform of the body, there's material affection. And so the stringent laws are time destroys all bodies. And if one disobeys, this is coming up in the next verse, why did this terrible thing happen, aside from the aggressions of the Kauravas against the Pandavas? Prabhupada points to the transgression against Draupadi, because Dushasana, one of the eldest of the brothers, under the indication of Duryodhan and Karna, did the dastardly deed of trying to strip Draupadi naked in public assembly, and they were all encouraging it. At least the Kauravas were encouraging it. Finished. Stringent laws of nature. So, Prabhupada writes, when we are liberated from material affection and are situated in our original spiritual form, we can see both ourselves and the Lord face to face. Then, restating the same thing in different language, mukti means to be reinstated in one's original spiritual status after giving up the material conception of life. As long as you have the couplet of I and mine go together, mind is based on the conception of I. what I think is mine flows from what I think I am. You don't have a there's not a disconnect between what I think is mine and what I think I am. They're one follows, in fact, from the other. So the material affection, material affinity, misplaced affinity, has to be addressed by the conception of self. Therefore, when Krishna speaks to Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita, the first thing he speaks about is the conception of self. You're a virtuous person, but it's misplaced virtue. The target or object of your virtuous nature is wrongly placed. So let's go back to the conception of self. So liberation or mukti comes after giving up the material conception of life. Then one can be situated in one's proper spiritual position, original spiritual status. Therefore, human life is specifically meant for qualifying ourselves for spiritual liberty. Unfortunately, under the influence of the illusory material energy, we accept this spot life of only a few years as our permanent existence, and thus become illusioned by possessing so-called country, home, land, children, wife, community, wealth, etc., which are false representations created by Maya. So there's another insoluble, stringent law of nature. If we accept the covering of the soul to be the self and abandon the soul, then there's miseries. Unavoidable. And people are so caught up in the miseries, and they're trying their very best to adjust the miseries, but it never gets adjusted because the foundation is still there. They have to remove the foundation of abandonment of self and accepting a mistaken identity of self. Otherwise, miseries perpetuate. Prabhupada calls this in this purport insoluble factors of material existence. Another way of saying the stringent laws of nature. So he gives a little, in the purport, Prabhupada gives a little formula of what one, if one is going to address a bereaving person, what components must be there in order to relieve them of their grief. And it starts with a misconception of self. Then at once we become free from material attachment. This clearance of the misgivings of material existence at once takes place by association with the Lord's devotees, who are able to inject the transcendental sound into the depths of the bewildered heart and thus make one practically liberated from all imitation and illusion. That is the summary of the pacifying measures for those affected by the reaction of stringent material laws, exhibited in the forms of birth, death, old age, and disease, which are insoluble factors of material existence. So it's very clear. And at the same time, it's very hard to apply. Certainly it's hard to apply when someone is clinging to the pain of some loss, material loss, of some object, namely a body, for which one has great affinity. And it's very hard clinging to that emotion. The emotion is connected to a misconception of self. So relief of the emotion has to be addressed by the proper conception of self. And not everybody can take it. Sometimes when dealing with a grieving person, it's the appropriate thing that is just to be there. So they can feel another kind of, they can receive your affection for them. Sometimes, like there's in a community, I've been involved in situations like this where there's a sudden death in a family. And the family's not ready to hear anything, Bhagavad Gita, second chapter. They just want someone to support them. So we just support them. Go and be there and be with them and chant and help them clean the house and cook the meals and just, you know, function, take care of the basic functions. Send the kids off to school and, you know, the basic things that have to happen. Help them through that difficult time. But if they're a little more transcendental, but still pained by the loss of separation, then where this message comes in, and certainly it's appropriate for Krishna to speak this way to the Pandavas, and Kunti, and Dhritarashtra and Gandhari. They're actually qualified persons that are covered by material identification. So the message is, once you understand the soul distinct from the body, then the next step is the soul certainly is going to, at some point in time, give up the body. So there's no cause for lamentation. At least not for the soul. They've just given up the body. It's not they're gone. They're still, the soul is still present in a different place. They're not dead. Their soul has moved. The root cause, Prabhupada, another phrase that I've heard couple hundred times in different lectures, is the root cause of suffering is ignorance. Identifying that which we are not to be what we are. And it's ignorance. It leads to suffering. We place value in that which we aren't, and then if we're not satisfied, and when we lose that which we aren't, thinking that's who we are, we suffer. Very unfortunate. Completely unnecessary. And so the mitigating means, again, is this injection of sound that can go deeply into the heart. So the qualified person speaking that message, vibrating that message, and the person receiving that message. Prabhupada writes, Krishna pacified them on the basis of knowledge. Text 5. The clever Duryodhan and his party cunningly usurped the kingdom of Yudhisthira, who had no enemy. By the grace of the Lord, the recovery was executed, and the unscrupulous kings who joined with Duryodhana were killed by him, with a capital H, so killed by Krishna. The instruments of the killing were others, but Krishna finished them. Others also died, their duration of life having decreased for the rough handling of the hair of Draupadi. And in the purport, Prabhupada chooses to introduce something that becomes a theme without throughout this first canto, that is the protection of five classes of beings. So five classes of beings that are deserving of protection are the brahmanas and the cow, go brahmana hitayacha, so the brahmanas and the cow, and women, and children, and the elderly. That's five. Here's what Prabhupada writes about each one. First he introduces, in the glorious days, or before the advent of the age of Kali, the brahmanas, cows, women, children, and old men were properly given protection. Number one, the protection of the brahmanas results in the maintenance of the institution of varna and ashram, the most scientific culture for attainment of spiritual life. So you can't have a social body without a head. Rip off the head or have no head, and it's a directionless body. So in order to have, conversely, in order to have the mission, one of the missions that Prabhupada explicitly took up was putting a head back on the body, or creating a class of Brahmins so they could act as the head of the social body. Head has the functions of seeing, so having vision, hearing, speaking, having clear thought, eating on behalf of the Lord, offering to the brahmanas, protection of the brahmanas in brahminical culture. The cows. Protection of cows maintains the most miraculous form of food, namely milk, for maintaining the finer tissues of the brain, for understanding higher aims of life. This isn't a vegan commercial by any means. I won't comment further. I will comment further. The Vaishnavas should take up cow protection. The argument of the vegans is milk is the product of violence and so you shouldn't take milk. But then if milk came from a cow that is protected, what would a vegan do? I don't know what the answer is. Do you know what their answer is? No? Okay. They got an issue.
Just take it out of this. That somehow if you're taking something from the animals or giving them in any way.
Okay.
Somehow
okay.
It's not
taking
proper.
From the animal. Okay.
Yeah, somehow not proper.
Okay. 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 The protection, number three, the protection of women maintains the chastity of society by which we can get good generation for peace, tranquility, and progress of life. And the message of the rest of the purport regards to women is when that's neglected, then everybody dies. I mean, those that are responsible for that, they're destroyed. I was invited some years ago to the opening of one of our ISKCON temples in Guyana, with the understanding that the president of Guyana would attend the opening. So they wanted some ISKCON persons to be there, VIP. So I went, and his lecture was very interesting. I spoke something, and his lecture was about two things. protection of women and children. His thing was, my dear Guyanese people, we have so many resources in our country, but the human resources undeveloped, and therefore the resources of our country are undeveloped. And so he had a whole speech about he values improving the education for our children. The problem, one of the problems besides the academic part of education, is instilling values within the children so that in their adult stage they'll be of good character. But we've failed to do that. So he explained he has developed a group of ministry or something like that of leaders of religions, that maybe the leaders of religions collectively can assist the government in instilling values within the children in the educational system. He said, my wife is heading that. She's very dedicated to this. So, protection of children. And he mentioned also the protection of women. I guess there's some problems in that department. You know, prominent departments, prominent problems. And he was saying something very similar to what Prabhupada is stating here. If women are not protected, then our country's a failure and everything is destined to ruination. So that was his speech, and looking to the ISKCON, because so tying it back, besides his little political speech, tying it back to the event, looking to organizations such as ISKCON to help him in his governmental role to accomplish this in the country. And as far as I could understand from my discussions with the devotees, that he doesn't just talk about those things and then he doesn't do anything. He really means it and tries to uphold that value in society. That's the duty of a ruler, of a leader. Protection of children, number four, gives the human form of life its best chance to prepare the way of liberty from material bondage. Such protection of children begins from the very day of beginning of the child by the purificatory process of Garbhadhan Sanskar, the beginning of pure life. This past week was the first week of the Gita camp, or the second Gita camp for the kids in Chicago, and I got a bunch of messages from the kids how the camp went. And besides, they were very happy. Particularly the older children are serving as counselors for the younger children, and they're starting to feel, not just understand, but feel what their role is. Their role is there to give spiritual example, and that means leadership to the younger children. And they, you know, they're kind of, first it was, you know, like a power trip, and then it was, oh, we don't like it, and then now it's settling somewhere in between, that they understand that's how they can give back from what they've been given. They're maturing. Then they went in Harinam. They went in Harinam on Saturday morning and Sunday morning. That there was a walkathon or something like that right through Naperville, and so the kids were all chanting and dancing and the people were amazed. They got an invitation to be part of some other function so they could chant and dance and be happy and give their message. And one of them speak. So Shruti met and wrote and said, now I can understand what you've been saying all along, that this, you know, we're the future. This is something that we should be doing regularly, and setting the example and bringing this message to others. That's the future. This is our, now we're doing what our future is. This is our role, our service. But, so it's not just chant and happy, have fun, although it's those things, but specifically it's the deeper message is prepare the way for liberty from material bondage. The bodily conception and thinking in terms of decorating the body and enjoying the senses and doing all those nescient, focused activity. And a very joyful and active life that's free from those unwanted things needs to be taught from childhood. And then Prabhupada presents, as he will often do, that the protection begins even before the moment of conception. Real protection is proper purification of consciousness of mother and father, and then that in turn can be passed on to the children. And number five, the protection of old men gives them a chance to prepare themselves for a better life after death. Final paragraph. This complete outlook is based on factors leading to successful humanity as against the civilization of polished cats and dogs. The killing of the above mentioned innocent creatures is totally forbidden, because even by insulting them one loses one's duration of life. That's the stringent laws that were spoken of, that Lord Krishna was letting them know. You violate these stringent laws and then death, you're inviting death sooner. And that's what's happened. Just as Vidura was cautioning all along, sure enough it happened, because Dhritarashtra, as the king, or the father at least of the Kauravas, didn't act to curb Duryodhan. And so the stringent laws of material nature came to play. So the message that Krishna was sharing was going to the stringent laws of nature and the permanent position of the soul. And those things need to be held in the mind, because if they leave the mind, then, you know, such a massacre of life doesn't make any sense. Even the loss of one life doesn't make any sense. But the invincible force of time makes sense. So there's nothing to be lamented. And Krishna's words were effective. Everyone became pacified, because his words deeply entered into the hearts of those who heard them speak, and their material conceptions were broken, and the spiritual conception restored. Okay, so that's our verses for this morning. See if there's any discussion.
Hmm. Yeah, a couple of questions. When something untoward happens in one's life that they didn't bring it upon by themselves, is it entirely due to their past karma, or are there other reasons? The second question that I have is, how are some people able to remember the events of their past lives?
For ordinary people like us, the answer to the first question is yes. For elevated people like Prahlad Maharaj and the Pandavas and Kunti, no. And how do some people remember their past lives the same way they can forget their past lives? Matakshmatir Gyanam Apohanam Cha. Krishna provides that remembrance, or Krishna provides the forgetfulness. How does, you know, someone have an ability to paint or to sing, and another person, they always sing off key? There's an ability that comes from Krishna. So, that's what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said to the Kashmiri Brahmin, who was known to be a fantastic Sanskritist. So Chaitanya asked him, can you compose some poetry in glorification of Mother Ganges? Oh yes, I can compose poetry in glorification of Mother Ganges. Watch me. So, as swift as the wind, he composed 100 verses spontaneously in glorification of Mother Ganges. So Lord Chaitanya said, oh, how wonderful, your skill is not to be found anywhere in the whole world. Now, could you describe to me the ornaments and the faults of, I forget which number, the number 57? And the man said, well, I can't remember number 57, I just composed them so spontaneously. And then Lord Chaitanya said, well, I can remember number 57, and it went like this, and recited it. And now can you tell me what are the ornaments and the faults? And the Brahmin said, how did you remember that? And Lord Chaitanya's answer was, just like some people have the ability to compose spontaneous Sanskrit poetry, like yourself. And some other persons are given by the same Lord the ability to remember things. So, some ability, some ability. Now, what are the ornaments and the faults? Oh, there's no faults. It's all ornaments. But ability comes from the personality of Godhead, Super Soul. Anything else? Okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
Thanks for having us, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.